Welcome to Sport Unpacked, a regular podcast that explores issues in sport and the views of researchers at La Trobe University. I'm Professor Russell Hoy, Director of La Trobe Sport, your host, and my guests today are Dr. Mandy Reddock-Hudson, a lecturer from the School of Public Health, and Mr. Michael Malthouse, Senior Coach of the Carlton Football Club and a Vice Chancellor's Fellow here at La Trobe University. Our topic today is the AFL coaching lifestyle. We're going to explore questions such as, what is life like as a professional coach? How do people become senior or assistant coaches in the AFL? How do coaches deal with the stress associated with their job? And how can we conduct effective studies of coaches in such a high-pressure environment? Mandy, the world of professional coaching in the AFL seems very tough. A high turnover rate, limited senior roles to aspire to, and a ton of media and public scrutiny. Can you paint a picture for us as life as an AFL coach?
I'd probably describe it as long hours, a roller coaster of emotions, a challenging environment which is outcome-based, the pursuit of excellence in a competitive environment, and the love of the game.
So Mick, you've been a coach for 28 years and just started a new role as a coach. What is your sort of perception of life as an AFL coach?
Well, Russell, the lifestyle of a football coach has changed dramatically since I started. And the journey was as a player, and then having a taste in the early 20s, in my early 20s, of thinking, I've now had two of the great coaches, and now I've had another two or three coaches that have all been premiership players or high-profile players that end up coaching a premiership. So I've been spoiled, but I always question them. And I've got to say, I don't know whether it was right or wrong. I never questioned them to their face, but I always went home and thought, would I have done something different? Mid-20s, so I guess I had a leaning towards, at the end of my football career, getting into coaching. Never thought for one moment. I always talk about goal setting and having the opinion that you should always have a raised ceiling and so you can actually strive for something. Mine was limited to thinking that I could be a reserve coach or a country coach or a VFA coach or maybe going interstate. And only in my wildest dreams towards the end of my playing career did I really think I'd coach a senior side. And that came about and probably for another time. But the perception was of hard work, yes, loving the game, getting the best out of people, being organised, and that didn't disappoint, all those things. And as time went on, I reckon it was probably into my ninth or tenth season, rather, sixth season at Western Bulldogs, and into my fourth odd season at West Coast, I realised that things had to be done differently to actually survive it.
Yeah, and what were those sort of things that you did differently determined that had to be different to actually survive in that role?
Right, well, the game went from amateur, basically amateur, you're getting paid, but it was amateur hours, to semi-professional to fully professional. The demands of a coach, media-wise, club-wise, and I'm talking club here for membership and sponsorship and coteries and so forth, and then the fact that players had so much time on their hands, you couldn't be dismissive of them, so you had to really put some time into them. Now, to put time in them, you really have to have some good, solid staff who understand your MO, if you like, and also uphold it. So therefore, you are teaching staff and you are teaching players and you're teaching club. You didn't realise you're teaching the club, but at the end of the day, you were establishing a culture. And Mandy said about a pursuit of excellence. Yes, that is number one. I think that fair and square, though, by the rule book, by establishing a culture that you can live by and also your players come out of it. So I had a chance to travel and I went to the States and Europe and I came away thinking, I'm not a football coach, I'm actually a person manager and I've got my coaches under me. And I've kept that system now for over half of my football coaching is that I manage the team, manage the coaches, and the coaches get down and get dirty, if you like it. Get some mud on them.
Right, so you certainly painted a picture of a very sort of complex environment compared to, say, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, Mandy, you've recently completed a study of AFL coaches. What was the interest in conducting such a study?
Well, interestingly, my initial involvement with AFL didn't commence through the love of the game. I sort of fell into the industry 10 years ago when I was researching an area for my PhD. And since then, I've become actively involved with the AFL Coaches Association as their organisation continues to grow. And this research was really ignited by the media coverage of Mark Bomber-Thompson, who was a senior coach of the Geelong Football Club at the time, and it was revealed that he was potentially burnt out due to occupational demands and stresses involved in the AFL coaching environment. Health and well-being of workers and stress in the workplace has been studied throughout human history, so this isn't new information. But stress has become one of the most serious health issues of the 21st century, and chronic job stress has been associated with a range of physical, psychological, social and behavioural health problems. To date, there has been extensive research that's examined occupational stress in the workplace in environments such as education and healthcare, but there was limited information in relation to the occupation of sports coaching. Now, we know that sports coaches are exposed to complex, ever-changing environments, as Mick's just mentioned. Not only do the coaches take on that specific coaching role, but they also guide their athletes in physical, mental, technical and tactical skills, as well as facilitating the personal development of the athlete. The number of paid coaches has also increased worldwide, and the evolution of coaching has now become a recognisable occupation that is fast advancing towards professionalisation. So for coaches who operate within the elite sport, as Mick does here, the pressure typically intensifies with a results-orientated culture that requires considerable investment and time and resources in the search of the competitive edge. Unfortunately, in many sports, and AFL is no different, the period of employment for coaches can be short and positions are highly sought after. With no concrete data that represents the roles and responsibilities of AFL coaches, we felt that this research was warranted. Although this is a relatively small population, from an industry perspective and also a public health perspective, we felt that we had a duty of care for this population. And in addition, it is a population that, due to increased work demands and scrutiny, places them at a risk of occupational stress associated with a work-life balance. So therefore, we started to investigate.
And that sort of background you've painted sort of illustrates the complexity of the coaching world and working in that space. How did you go about designing your study and then actually carrying it out?
Well, the aim of the research was to obtain some preliminary information that would identify the life satisfaction, general health and well-being of AFL assistant coaches. The study was designed in two stages. The first stage, we established a semi-structured interview, which was obviously exploratory in nature, and we had one assistant coach representative from each of the 17 AFL clubs at the time in the national competition. They were invited to take part in the interview process. So once all the interview data was analysed, we then constructed a questionnaire that was distributed to all assistant coaches in the competition. The questionnaire package contained measures related to general health, social support, job stress, tension and burnout, and effective reactions.
Well, that's a pretty complex study. So what were your main findings? Like, what were the main demands that assistant coaches perceived they faced when coaching in the AFL?
I think there were some really interesting findings that emerged from the data. Coaches actually worked an average of 69 hours per week, and this was not including time away from the club when they were actually planning and thinking about game preparation and or training. So we were looking at 100 plus hours per week. Interestingly, only 54% of assistant coaches reported that they had a designated day off during the week, so a number of them were working 7 and 14 days straight. And the results also indicated that 98% of assistant coaches reported generally high psychological distress during the football season. Also, the results indicated that more than one third of assistant coaches reported a moderate level of emotional exhaustion during the season, indicating that they actually felt emotionally overextended and exhausted by their work. So when we asked them what they perceived to be the main demands that they were faced with within this particular injury, the first one was time restraints. That was the number one factor. The second one was time away from their family. The third was an unbalanced lifestyle. And fourthly was the workload.
Wow, you paint a fantastic picture of work as an AFL assistant coach. Mick, in your,
the assistants.
In your experience, Mick, does that sort of reflect what you've seen in dealing with coaches over the last 28 years, your various teams you've worked with?
Well, to a degree, Russell, I would like to think that if there's 17 coaches being interviewed, and it was done last year, that's fine. Guy wasn't part of the scene. But if it had been done the year before, I'd be very disappointed that, one, the assistant coach that was interviewed didn't say he did know the day off. I'm very aware of family commitments. I'm very aware of the pressures. I understand about win-loss ratio, but nonetheless, I always press my coaches not to worry about that and look at the process. Their goal is to, they want to stay in that role, they want to advance in that role. most want to advance. The older ones tend to say, I think I've gone past it. I just want to stay in this type of role as an assistant. And then there's the ones that are assistants that are very, very hungry for success in the next level. And I believe we have a little bit of an attraction, if you like, to youth. This is boards, and I'm not 100% sure that is the way to go. I've purposely and particularly put names out there to get jobs. And indeed, I think you'll find this year there's six club coaches that have either been my player or assistant coach. Were they already? Probably not. But was I at 30? No. So there is, I've got to be very careful about saying that they're too young to do it. But I think in today's football, you need to have an establishment of an assistant role to know what all these pitfalls are and either jump out or understand them and stay in. And each league coach, I have no doubt, is different in makeup, like game structures, similar to he has makeup differences in hours expected, time wanted, and some are family first and others are family very much second or third. So there's no doubt, even though there's only 18 league clubs and 18 league senior coaches, there would be a great range of people that would have a different idea of what they expect from their assistant coach and how much time they're going to give him off and make his life a bit more meaningful, if you like.
Now, there's clearly, Mandy, there's a lot of media scrutiny around the profession of sports coaching. We generally hear that people remain in the industry for the love of the game. Therefore, what are the factors that motivate assistant coaches to keep working those long hours and to buy into that equation, particularly in their early years, perhaps, when they are starting in the coaching role?
Obviously, it probably seems that I've painted a pretty grim picture of the assistant coach role, but the really lovely thing to report was that although coaches did identify that it was a tough industry with many challenges, they loved the game, and that is what motivated them. Also, as well, to support that, the number one reason why coaches do work the long hours, the most important thing for them was actually developing and teaching players. I thought it was really interesting that the number one factor that motivated them was not actually winning and the team success, but it was developing the players. Winning and team success was obviously up there, along with the passion and love of the game and also the team environment and the industry in which they worked. So there are some really important positive messages that came out of the research too.
And from Mick's perspective, do you think there's a place or can AFL clubs provide a more balanced sort of approach to managing their assistant coaches? Because you painted a picture where you're much more in tune with the human dimension of your coaches you employ. Do you think most clubs have a way to go in getting to that point?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, even though I've been to a lot of clubs, I should say that. I think what you end up doing is, as you mature as a person yourself, and then as a coach secondly, you have a little bit more faith in your own abilities. I half suspect that anyone under 7 years loves a job, but has a fear of how long it'll last for, because we know the average years of a senior coach is not many, 5 and a bit years, I think it is, 5.5 years. So when I see my assistant coaches go out, they say, what's the word of advice? I say to them, be yourself and do everything. Your first couple of years, peel the oranges, be the doorman, be the statistician, be everything so that you have a thorough understanding. And then when you've got your confidence in that, you can back off. And I think you asked the question about how I see it. Well, I'm a lot more relaxed, believe it or not, now, because I have the comfort of thinking, well, I think I know a fair bit about the game. I know there's still a lot of things to learn, but I'm no longer worried about, will I have my job? Because you just say, well, if you haven't got your job, you haven't got your job, particularly at my age. But I don't fear that someone's going to out-coach me, and therefore they're going to go, I will be a coach, certainly at some stage, because different teams have different balances. But I don't go to sleep at night or go to bed at night thinking, my biggest worry tonight is, will I hold my job? Whereas some younger coaches do, so therefore they put enormous pressure on their staff to get it right and get a win. But you'll find, and they will find, if they last in the game, you can afford to think the old adage, the harder you work, the better you get, or the luckier you get. I say the harder you work and the smarter you work, the luckier you get. So to me, smartness is having a fresh mind and having a family life where you can walk out the door on early in the morning and go, I'm happy, my wife's happy, my children are happy. I know tomorrow I'll have the day off, or I'll get my work done later in the afternoon or early in the morning and I'll be home for dinner. And know that they are not putting pressure on you because people who come to work with pressure on them never perform at the best. And that's when you get this hostility within the group that you want to get away, or the player wants to get away, or the coach wants to get away, and puts massive pressure on that unit. And that's when I think things come undone.
Now, you've obviously gone through a number of seasons where you've seen AFL coaching staff sort of get under pressure when maybe perhaps the team is on a losing streak or things aren't going as well, higher injury rate. How do you consciously manage that sort of balance about how your, not just your playing group is working, but how your coaching staff are sort of operating as a group?
This is the Monday facade. You walk in with a 10-goal win. You can't afford to walk in as if you've thrown the biggest party of all time. If you've been belted, you can't walk in with your shoulders down and your head down and make out that's the end of the earth, because you've got to always look at next week as the most important week. So what's happened in the past has happened. So I instruct my coaches, if I have to walk in like that, I want them to walk in like that. So straight away you're starting to look forward as opposed to back. So I try, and we do have 5 or 6 or 7 weeks in a row where you've lost games and you think there's going to be no end to losing, but it's all behind. So the simple thing is I try to say, well, next week, new week, got to have an optimism about you, because if you don't, the players got no hope of winning. The senior job alone is a standalone. There's no question when you get multiple losses, you feel isolated. And that is just a fact of life. That'll never change. Even to the point where you don't want your deputies around you, because you don't want to have them feel the same pressure. So you're better off having this isolation, but give them as much feedback, positive feedback as you can, and let them live their life without having to have the same burden as a senior coach. So I think it's your job of a senior coach is to make sure that you get the most out of your assistant coach by not letting him be dragged down by the pressures of a senior coach. Now, if that makes sense.
Now, Mandy, you conducted your study with the imprimatur of the AFL Coaches Association. What's been some of the responses to your study from that group or the wider sort of coaching industry in the AFL?
The project was originally funded by the AFL Research Board, so it was identified as a research priority area. The data is currently being used to guide and also inform the design of educational and health programs within the AFL Coaches Association, so that's a really positive step within the industry. And also in 2013, this year, the health initiative for the AFL Coaches Association is actually mental health, and the organisation is aiming to set up to upskill coaches in this particular area. So we feel that this research project actually set up the foundation for that project.
Right, and Mick, this year the study is going to be extended to senior coaches, not just the assistant coach pool. Do you expect there to be much difference in the findings from the study of the senior coach? Because you mentioned before it's a very isolating role at times.
Yeah, I think Mandy will find that, with all due respect to assistant coaches, I've never been one, so I've got to be careful here, but assistant coaches never put their hand up and say, we lost. But if there's a good win, and it's a forward line or back line or midfield, and they're very happy to have the praise, whereas a senior coach has got to take it on. The buck must stop with you. And if that's not the case, and you want to load up some other direction, all you're doing is passing the loss onto someone else. That is so irresponsible. One of the things about senior coaching is wins will last 5 minutes, a loss will last a whole week. And if you lose the last game, it can last a lifetime, because you never forget it. But that's something you've got to wear. And I always say to people, I don't have to do this job. Don't ever feel sorry for me. I do the job because I love the job. So this is part and parcel of it. That little edge of adrenaline that rushes through your body just before the ball bounces, you wouldn't be without that. And that's part of being a senior coach, is that can you change the course of a game? Can you change the course of a year because of what you've done previous to that, like through October through to, say, March? Can you get a player to set a new standard or a new PB? So I think assistant coaches are very good and thoroughly needed. The senior coach has got to take all that on board and be responsible. You cannot afford to forget responsibility in this job. And the more wins, the more pressure, the more losses, clearly the pressure comes back through to the board. The board will always be the ones that say, we put you on, you're not doing the job, you're gone. And you've got to always remember you're a servant to the board. So I always take these things on. One, servant to the board. Two is take the responsibility, and the responsibility basically is going to be for a loss. Three is what can you do about it? And how can you change the culture, or how do you change the systems within the organisation to make it a better organisation? So if you occupy your mind with all that sort of stuff, then outside influences really are only outside influences, as much as you take on. So, and getting back to it's the family that gets affected more so. So it's the protection of the family is most important, but you'll find the senior coach, I would say, of all the things he'll say, is what effect it has on the family.
Right, now, given Mandy's outcomes from her study, do you think that looking at the ability of an assistant coach to potentially deal with all those pressures is one of the sort of the job requirements you look for, or the traits in a potential assistant coach? You sort of take that into consideration when you look at them, not just their ability to be a skills coach or a defence coach, but the ability to cope with the world of being an assistant coach?
Yeah, I don't take on an assistant coach to look at him as he's going to be a senior coach. I take him on, can he do a part? I know this might sound a little bit vain, but I select people on my panel to be better than me. So in other words, if I take the director of science on, the only thing I'll do to him is I always say, I will challenge you. I won't tell you what to do because he's trained up in it. He's probably done more years at doing that job. All I say to him is, if I need a player at 85 kilos, can you get him 85 kilos? That's the question. Can I get this kid quicker? I don't tell him how to get him quicker. Doctors won't interfere with the doctors. The doctors tell me what's wrong. Football operations manager, he draws up the contracts, et cetera, and the rules and so forth. But assistant coaches, you've got a right to know that you have got to be better than, because you've got to teach them. Now, if one of them slides past you, it goes ahead, well, draw on that, because some of them have got an innate ability just to know more about certain people or about certain divisions. So, okay, draw on it. But when I put those people on, I don't put them on as senior coaches. But as the years go on and they look like they've got senior qualities, yes, he could be a good coach, but I'll say this. When you sit in the passenger side, you're still in the front seat, but you're not actually steering it or putting the foot on the brake or accelerator. No one will know that until you actually have to sit in the driver's seat and know when to go and know when to stop.
All right, thanks, Mick. Mandy, so where to next for the research? Where do you think this is going to go?
Well, as previously discussed, we're going to look at the senior coaching role, and specifically we're going to look further into occupational stress as well as examine the role of social support. So Mick's just spoken about the family influence here, so this is potentially something that we will be examining with this particular cohort. So we look forward to building the partnership.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Dr. Mandy Braddock-Hudson, a lecturer from the School of Public Health, and Mr. Michael Malthouse, Senior Coach of the Carlton Football Club and a Vice Chancellor's Fellow here at La Trobe University. Thanks also to Matt Smith from the digital media team for his stellar production. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Russ Hoy. You can also find the podcast on the La Trobe University website under the news tab and also at www.latrobe.edu.au/CSSI.